A mass shooting occurred in Indianapolis in 2021. It was committed by 19-year-old Brandon Hull, a young man who had a history of severe mental illness and was previously identified by the FBI as a potential mass shooter. Yet no mental health facility would take Brandon in, and police took no steps to prevent Brandon from obtaining firearms. To make this tale even stranger, we have reports of Brandon being a white supremacist, a Nazi lover, and even a brony. Prepare for one strange trip this week.
Helen, missing, hidden, the podcast about bad things.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, your favorite podcast about bad things. I'm your host and former criminal defense trial attorney, Battling Brad. I feel like I need a nickname, don't I? I want to try this one out. How is it? No good? Bah. All right, we'll figure one out. I'll take suggestions. Welcome to this week's show. We try to pump these things out every Tuesday. If you need more KMH in your life than that, just sign up for KMH Plus, where you get about 2 extra episodes per month. Just like our latest subscriber, Emily. I was going to write a poem expressing our love for Emily's loyalty and devotion, but kids got in the way. Just know that we will etch your name prominently on the great statue we will raise in honor of our podcast once we get a few million dollars in our bank account. You're the best, Biggie. You're the best. Is that an appropriate nickname for a woman? No? Okay. So I'm 0-for-2 on nicknames today. Good start. I would ask y'all, just as a special favor, please make sure you listen to the end of this episode. I don't want to ramble on now, but I have some things I'd like to cover with y'all, and you may enjoy hearing them too, because I may turn you on to some better podcasts than this mess. So, speaking of mess, on with the show. So our bad guy this week is Brandon Scott Hull of the Indianapolis, Indiana area. Now, he's only 19 when this story takes place in 2021. Brandon's childhood was far from ideal. He was diagnosed with a few mental health issues while in his younger teenage years. He had begun developing an unusual change in attitude while in the fourth grade. He became just unusually aggressive and combative. It was like he couldn't control his temper. It kind of escalated to him attacking and stabbing his mother. But, you know, his mom, whose name was Sheila, she was a devoted mother. She did everything she could to find help for her son. She knew something was seriously wrong, and she wasn't a stranger to the situation. That's because, sadly, Brandon's father killed himself via gunshot wound in their backyard when Brandon was only 3. Now, of course, he's young. He's a toddler. He probably doesn't remember all the details, but it doesn't matter. That's going to leave a serious scar on your psyche. Now, despite Sheila's best efforts, Brandon's mental health began to devolve pretty quickly once he got into high school and into his upper teenage years. Police were called to help control Brandon on at least 2 occasions when he just became more than Sheila could control. Again, like I said, his aggression was just ramping up, and his ability to control it just wasn't there. You know, eventually these mental health issues caused Brandon to have to be removed from school. So he couldn't go to class anymore. He couldn't graduate with his peers. And that too had an impact on him. He knew now that he was different. He wasn't the same as everybody else. In March of 2020, Sheila contacted local police in a panic, because she was convinced Brandon was preparing to commit suicide by cop. Suicide was a regular topic for him. He talked about planning to kill himself regularly, how he was going to do it, how he wanted to do it, and what the effects would be. But the reason why this event in March of 2020 got Sheila so upset is because Brandon had purchased a shotgun. Now, police, of course, responded to this call. They came to the house, and because of the situation, they felt they had to involuntarily commit Brandon to a mental health facility. So he was handcuffed and taken to the squad car. Now, while the police are there at Sheila's request, one of the officers goes and seizes the shotgun from Brandon's room. While in there, he noticed Brandon's computer was still on, and he took a look at what Brandon was poking around on, and it was a white supremacist website. Contemporaneously with this going on, Brandon is being put in the squad car, and he's begging officers, please, somebody turn off my computer. I don't want my mom to see what I've been looking at. The totality of the situation caused the FBI to investigate Brandon. But they didn't investigate him for long. They found that there really wasn't a whole lot of evidence that he was motivated by some sort of extremist racial philosophy, or that he had committed a crime in any way. So they couldn't just spin their wheels and investigate nothing. Police later would report that when Brandon's computer was seized and thoroughly investigated, they reviewed over 175,000 files on his computer, and less than 200 of them dealt with Germany and World War II in any way. And of those, only a fraction really addressed the German military or any Nazi propaganda or ideology. Now, despite closing this investigation, an FBI agent went out of his way to talk to Sheila and told her that, look, when it comes to things we look for on whether or not somebody's likely to become a mass shooter, Brandon is hitting all the checkboxes here. So you've got to keep a close eye on him. He is a danger. Now, we got to note that the state of Indiana has what is known as a red flag law. And this is where law enforcement can go to a court and ask for an order to prevent an individual from being able to purchase firearms when there's evidence that either the person is just completely mentally unstable and or is likely to pose a threat to himself or others in the near future. For reasons that have never been adequately explained, local law enforcement and prosecutors never took this step. They never asked for a court to issue an order preventing Brandon from being able to buy weapons. One source I found quoted an unnamed prosecutor who claimed that if they had the hearing, this red flag hearing, and lost, they would be forced to return Brandon's shotgun to him. But remember, Sheila asked police to take it, and in later interviews, Sheila said, no, we would not have accepted that shotgun. We did not want it in the house. So I guess if we're to believe this prosecutor, police would have shown up at the whole residence and just forced this weapon into Brandon's hand. I don't know. Brandon tried his best to lead a normal life. He tried to hold down a job. He tried to work to earn money, but he just couldn't do it. He just was very limited in what he was able to do. When he would work and he would earn money, he would use his income to buy firearms. One job he held was at the area's biggest employer, Federal Express. He worked there from August to October of 2020, and he was let go only because he stopped showing up for work. He just disappeared. So twice during the second half of 2020, it's clear from court records that Brandon was able to successfully and legally purchase assault rifles from local gun shops. Again, time's going by, and as time's going by, Brandon's mental health is continuing to deteriorate. He reported to his mother that he was having suicidal thoughts daily. And again, Sheila is doing what she can to get Brandon help. She's trying to find psychiatrists that will take him on as a client. She's taking him to every appointment that she can get set. I don't totally understand the circumstances of this, but apparently he was forced to attend an emergency counseling session due to his constant, dreams of suicide and other aggressive actions. And after this emergency counseling session, he was labeled a moderate suicide risk. I don't know what you would have to do to become a serious suicide risk. I mean, again, this poor kid is daily talking about killing himself, and that only gets you to the moderate category. His last appointment with any sort of mental health professional was on April 15th of 2021. And hours later, Brandon would be dead. That evening, Brandon returned to his former employer, FedEx, at 11 p.m. It's believed that he specifically picked this time as it was a common shift change time for many of the departments. So he had lots of employees coming and going from the parking lot. In addition, for those employees whose shift was not over, this was a popular lunch time. So Brandon shows up in the parking lot, he gets out of his car, and he approaches the main employee entrance where there's security. He's clearly not armed with a rifle or any significant weapon at this time. And the CCTV footage apparently shows him talking to the security officers for a few moments before he's kind of turned away. He returns to his car, and the next time he's seen on surveillance tape, he's carrying two rifles and is firing indiscriminately. He swiftly moved towards the employee entrance and made his way into the facility. And basically, he continued firing at anyone he saw, and those that were there said that he was ranting passionately about something, but nobody could make out what he was saying. Unfortunately, on top of all this, this FedEx facility had a no phone policy. You could not bring your cell phone into the building, and very few stations had a phone. So while Brandon's walking around and shooting people at random, employees are just huddled up. They're hiding, they're scared, and there's nothing they could do. They couldn't call the police. There was no way for them to get help. The shooting seemed to last for hours for the people inside, but in reality, it was over within 4 minutes. And it ended when Brandon took his own life. It was at this point that police were finally able to be contacted. And when they arrived, this was a situation of chaos and carnage. Brandon had ended up killing 8 employees, plus himself, and he had wounded another 4. Employees were just in a state of massive panic because this is a very large facility. They know a shooting's going on, but word can't spread fast enough that it's been taken care of. So people are running around, you know, like chickens with their head cut off. They're just panicking. They're in utter panic. So police were kind of forced to break into 3 teams when they got on site. One squad went to the victims. They secured the areas where the victims were and ensured that EMTs and other medical personnel could do their job without fear of being injured. Second team went inside the facility to make sure Brandon was down, to make sure that the violence had ended. The third team, they just tried to calm down the employees. They went around and, you know, basically told everybody, it's okay, calm down. The shooting's been contained. Remain calm. You know, let's get outside. Everybody get some air. When Brandon's body was found, he was carrying just the two assault rifles. And from, although this was not explicitly stated in any source, it sounds like he did not bring any extra ammunition. So Brandon apparently planned this to be a quick operation. There are reports that Brandon spent months planning this, and some say up to 9 months planning this, you know, suicidal rampage. But we don't get any details about what his plan was. And from what we can tell, it just seemed to be wander the building and shoot who you can. Now, of course, one of the first questions people ask is why this FedEx facility? Why would you pick to go there? And a lot of people speculated that it was racially motivated because, and I honestly tried to get this pronunciation right, and the internet doesn't totally agree with how you pronounce this word. So if I'm wrong, I apologize. I did my best. But many members of the Sixth Faith worked in this facility. There's some reports that claim that 90% of the hourly employees were of the Sixth Faith. Coupled with the Nazi material that was found on Brandon's computer, a whole bunch of people jumped to the conclusion that this was clearly a hate crime. But police and investigators and profilers unanimously agree that no, this was not, you know, racially motivated or religiously motivated in any way. He picked this FedEx facility because he knew the layout and he felt like with so many employees on site, if he showed up during a shift change, it would maximize his opportunity to cause as much mayhem as possible. You know, lots of bodies wandering around or lots of targets for him to kill before he offs himself. Now, if this wasn't motivated out of hate, then why on earth did Brandon choose to take so many lives with him? Again, we've got opinions from police and other experts, and they're kind of unanimous on this as well. Many of them feel like Brandon had this need to demonstrate his masculinity. For example, in his history, he tried to join the armed forces, but was rejected because of his mental health issues. Because he couldn't formally join, he kind of put himself through this off-brand version of basic training, you know, something he had designed himself. And he would spend weeks at a time eating the MREs that soldiers would eat when they're out in the field. That was his only source of nutrition. And so somehow him going into this facility and killing innocent, unarmed civilians who had no ill will towards him was his attempt to show how macho he was. They also believed that he was seeking some sort of thrill in his life. They felt like he, you know, he felt very bored and limited, like he couldn't do a whole lot with his life because of his mental health issues. And so being able to go on this rampage gave him one last thrill for the road, if we want to be kind of tacky about it. And overwhelmingly, you know, experts agree that the primary motive for all this occurring the way it did and when it did is because Brandon just didn't want to live anymore. And this is the way he felt like he needed to go out. As I hinted to earlier, one interesting and sensational bit a fact about Brandon is he was a Brony. If you don't know what that is, you've lived a good life. It's basically an adult male fan of the cartoon series My Little Pony. Now, I have heard of the term. I was aware this subculture existed, but I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about it. And really, all I knew about My Little Ponies before this episode is that my sister loved them when she was a kid, and they would occasionally get conscripted into serving as a cavalry unit for my G.I. Joes and Turtles. So I've dug into this a little bit, and here's what I've learned so you don't have to, my dear listeners. So this phenomenon is recognized as really beginning somewhere around 2010. And it coincided with the release of the cartoon My Little Ponies, Friendship is Magic. The bulk of the people in this fandom apparently grasp on to that friendship message. This is what the show teaches kids. And, you know, really, each of the characters is supposed to represent a different aspect of friendship. And the Bronies really, you know, grasp onto these ideals as well and try to embody them as best they can. Now, what's interesting is those that participate in this fandom or subculture or what have you recognize that, you know, this isn't the most masculine of pursuits. But by the same token, on their message boards and at conventions and things like that, they basically have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to what we would describe as, you know, toxic masculinity. Somebody being macho or over the top. You know, they basically want people to know that you can enjoy My Little Ponies without being less of a man. But there are some splinter groups in the Bronies, and they take things in a different direction. For example, several of these splinter groups sexualize and fetishize, if that's even a word, this whole My Little Pony world. And it seems like Brandon was part of this deviant, shadowed area of the Brony subculture. He was obsessed with a character by the name of Applejack, who I learned was the main character of that Friendship is Magic cartoon. And he apparently he was part of several Facebook groups about Bronies and My Little Ponies, and he would regularly post Photoshop pictures of him and Applejack hanging out like boyfriend and girlfriend. I probably didn't need to include the term photoshopped in there, but you know, he really felt like he had some connection with this cartoon pony. In fact, his last post ever on Facebook was an hour before the shooting, where he went into one of these Brony Facebook groups and typed out, quote, "I hope that I can be with Applejack in the afterlife. My life has no meaning without her." Now, interestingly, too, this is a rabbit trail that you can go down probably for days if you wanted to. All right, so you've got the Bronies on top, and it's a bunch of guys who just like this cartoon and try to embrace the message and seemingly try to be cool to each other and promote friendship and all that. Okay, fine. Then you've got, you know, these shadow deviant splinter groups that are like into the ponies a little too much. Well, even deeper still, way in the shadows and way in the splinters, there are some Brony groups that really grasp on to this, you know, hardcore right wing, you know, far extremist conservative philosophy. And, you know, they're racist, frankly. They have prejudice against different religions, against, you know, homosexuals, just basically everything you would kind of expect from, you know, a KKK member, you're going to find in somebody that dresses up like a pony and goes to conventions. And that's interesting to me, to put it mildly. I just can't imagine having the mindset of, I'm going to sit down and watch the ponies go on a picnic, then I'm going to go firebomb the synagogue. It's like copying and pasting from two totally different books. I don't get it. Now, I will encourage everyone to go watch the Bob's Burgers episode, The Equestrianauts, to get better familiarized with this world. It's season 4, episode 17. I can only assume this is a very accurate portrayal of the subculture, or at least the mainstream aspect of it, to the extent that there is a mainstream aspect of it. And now I've backed myself into a corner because I don't know how to segue to a conclusion after talking about men that dress up like My Little Ponies. So maybe we do like a Sopranos thing and just cut out men. Brandon Hull's shooting was one of 6 mass shootings in the United States in 2021. We'll never truly know why Brandon felt not only the need to take his own life, but the lives of so many other innocent people with him. The victims of his spree ranged in age from 19 to 74. 4 of the 8 were from the 6 community. Obviously, this man was very troubled, and once again, we see the mental health system in the United States failing to do its job. I mean, this young man was placed under their spotlight multiple times, yet no one went to help him or take the steps necessary to ensure that he received the help he needed. And this is despite his mother begging for help. It's just, guys, I'm not trying to pick out cases that demonstrate this. When I look for a case, I try to find one that seems interesting on its surface, because when I do this research and I write the script and all that stuff, it's in my free time. And I don't want to just push through an episode because it's a popular topic. I want it to be an episode that I want to learn about. And for whatever reason, we're hitting so many in a row that deal with mental health issues. If you do any independent research on this case, you will see a lot of newspapers push the hate crime angle hard. Several media sites clearly wanted this to be a hate crime. But again, police refused to classify it as such, even looking objectively at the crime, okay? He goes into an environment where the majority of the workforce are a religious minority, yet they only represent half of Brandon's victims. 90% of them are of the 6 community, yet only 50% of his victims are of the 6 community. So that strikes me that he wasn't interested in who he was killing. He just wanted to kill. You know, if he wanted to focus just on that community, he could have easily done that. And we would have had, you know, 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 8 of his victims being from the 6 community. Okay, please bear with me here, because I'm going to venture into an area that smarter people would not. And I'm not trying to make any political statements here. I'm not asking anyone to change their political beliefs or anything like that. But I'm really miffed that police did not do something to prevent Brandon from being able to buy firearms after what they had gone through. Now, I don't know that it's necessarily the police's fault. Okay? That they could have taken it to the prosecutor's office and the prosecutors could have dropped the ball. But regardless, there's a law in place to protect from this very situation happening. And you could not imagine a more ideal person this law would apply to than Brandon. He's severely mentally ill. He's been aggressive since he was in the fourth grade. He stabbed his mother. He admits he can't control his anger. He admits he thinks about killing himself on almost a daily basis. He's had plans to do suicide by cop. You've had an FBI agent say, this kid is destined to be a mass shooter unless someone intervenes. And nobody does anything to prevent him from getting his hands on firearms. That whole statement from the prosecutor that I read earlier about how they were scared that if they lost the hearing, they'd have to return the shotgun. I'm sorry, that's crap. I don't buy it for a second. First of all, they weren't going to lose that hearing, okay? I know nothing about Indiana law. I'm vaguely familiar with these red flag statutes. We don't really have any in Alabama, so I haven't dealt with it on a professional level. But you've got a kid who's, I mean, again, I just went through all the factors. You present that in court. What are the odds that a judge is going to say, yeah, but you know, he seems like a nice guy. You know, I just have a good feeling about him. That ain't going to happen. You're going to get your order, okay? The risk that Brandon would get his shotgun back as the reason for not wanting to have the hearing, like I said, that shotgun ain't coming back. That's just made up. This is purely a CYA effort so the prosecutors don't take any blame. And for whatever reason in my research, the media didn't push back on this, which was shocking to me. Having said all this, this would not have saved Brandon's life. And I hate to say that, but this kid without the mental health resources being made available to him, he was going to kill himself. He was going to die. However, I do believe it's going to be a heck of a lot harder to commit a mass killing with a knife than it is with two AR-15s, you know? So if you had gotten that order in place, how many lives would have been saved? And nobody did it. I want to add on, for her sake, Sheila has personally apologized to every victim's family. She's, you know, explained to them everything she tried to do to help Brandon, and she's asked for their forgiveness. I hope no one blames her, at least from what I've read. And maybe she's a total monster behind closed doors. I don't know, but there was no indication of that from my research. It's just, you know, I hate, again, we've got a mother trying to do everything she can for her son, and nobody's willing to help her. So, all right, we're going to end the story there. Let's cleanse the old palate, shall we? I won't even try to justify this one. Why can't pigs be trusted with a secret? Why can you not trust a pig with a secret? Because you know they're going to squeal. Right? No, terrible, terrible. You know, there's good, bad jokes, and there's bad, bad jokes. And I think we can all agree which one this one falls into. All right, like I said at the top of the show, I wanted y'all to stick around to the end just so I can give y'all some information. And this is that time. So please don't cut me off now. At least hear what I've got to say. On May 6th, this past Saturday, I was honored to be a part of the True Crime Live show in Birmingham, Alabama. This wasn't some sort of podunk little thing. This show was hosted by the podcast Corpus Delicti and included our true crime podcast, Southern Gothic podcast, and the award-winning Already Gone. And I say that with all seriousness, like a real award winner. Nina Instead, who's the host, won an Ambi for her work as a podcaster. That's basically the podcast equivalent of winning an Emmy or a Grammy. Like, she went up against all the big name podcasts you can think of, all these giant plastic corporate finance things, and she kicked their butt. And like all of these podcasts that I was around, they've got editors, they've got research assistants, like they're professionals. And then you've got me there. Why am I there? It was wild, but it was a blast. And I mean, there was an amazing turnout from the community. You know, secretly I was worried about how many people would show up, but no, we were jam packed. And so I really wanted to give these podcasts a quick shout out in the hopes that you'll give them a listen and maybe add them into your rotation. Again, start off with Corpus Delicti. They were the hosts. They were the ones that put all this together. They did all the grunt work. And it's basically just this wonderful little podcast hosted by two close friends who live in the Birmingham area. They cover true crime cases, but they do it in kind of a unique format where they do little, for lack of a better term, like sessions or seasons, with each one having a theme. You know, so you'll have like celebrity murders or sports murders or things like that. They're just exceptionally likable. They're just two. Jen and Lindsay are just two people that when you hear them, you can't help but to smile. So I would encourage you, check out Corpus Delicti. Next is our true crime podcast. It's hosted by Jen and Cam. Only Jen made the trip down to Birmingham, so she's obviously, you know, our favorite of the two. But this is just a very, very well-made podcast by, again, two friends. They have lots of loyal followers, and, I mean, they've got millions of downloads. Like, this, they're a big deal. They cover true crime cases from sort of all over the world. I think they take turns every week presenting a case to each other. Southern Gothic is hosted by Brandon, and he was the only other member of the male gender to show up, so I appreciated him being there so I wasn't alone. Brandon kind of serves as the MC for the event because his podcast is a lot more paranormal in nature. And Brandon, like, actually leads paranormal tours and does paranormal investigations and things like that. So that's what you're going to get from his podcast if you're into that stuff. A lot of basically a tour of the spooky and unknown and unexplained in the world. And then, you know, last but certainly not least, Already Gone with Nina there focuses on missing persons cases from the Great Lakes region of the United States. Nina also works as a voice actor, so you just know when you're going to listen to one of her episodes, it is buttery smooth. I mean, as Brandon kind of kept joking, you could listen to her read the phone book and you would stay interested. She's also lent her talents to podcasts such as Dead Ball and Don't Talk to Strangers. She's like one of the queens of the podcast world. And so it was so cool to have her there, especially when I feel like, you know, if you were going to have this mosaic, like a fairy tale type mosaic of the event, you know, she would be the queen and we'd have princesses and all that. I would be one of the unnamed goblins in the background that just kind of is seen for a moment. That's the level of greatness we're talking about when it comes to Nina. And she's sweet as she can be. So Already Gone, give that one a shot too. I also have to give props to the facility that hosted us. It was Wild Roast Cafe in Hoover, Alabama. If you live in central Alabama, it'd be in the Bluff Park area of Hoover. The greatest compliment I can pay to them. I mean, they were wonderful the entire time, but I think this defines them more than anything else. I had to bring two of my kids with me because of a babysitting error. And my youngest, being 8, had some toys with him. And during the course of the evening, he lost them. And he was absolutely devastated. And he looked, and his brother looked, and I looked everywhere we could for him. We couldn't find him. I went up to one of the members of the staff, and I said, "Hey, I'm sorry to bother you. I just want to know, have you seen any toys?" And, the staff person said, "No, but we're looking for him. I promise you we're looking for him." So they were already aware of my kid's situation. They were on top of it. And honestly, as I was packing up my bag to leave, they found it, or found the toys. And my 8-year-old just gave them a big old hug. And they were just, these are people who are cleaning up, getting ready to go home. And they put aside sweeping and cleaning tables to search for my kids' toys. So they're wonderful people. If you live in the Hoover area, please, please check out the Wild Rose Cafe. All right, so that's officially all I've got for this week. Again, I know I've talked a lot about the cool stuff I did this weekend, but we cannot forget the amazingness that is our newest subscriber, Emily. If you want to be showered with praise like her, you can join KMH Plus. It's only $5 a month. There should be a link in the show notes of every episode. If not, all of our social media accounts, I believe, have a link to it. And if you still can't find it, just hit me up. info@kmhpodcast.com or message me on one of the social media things. The more subscribers we get, the more we can grow the podcast. Maybe one day we can have professional editors and professional researchers and all that fun stuff. But again, what most important to me is please visit these other podcasts, at least give them a listen, see if they're your tastes, because they were just so kind to me and so wonderful to be around. And we had so much fun together. That would be the nicest thing you could do for me, is just return the grace and the hospitality they showed to me. So, all right. I'm officially done rambling. I promise. You guys have an awesome week. Brad out.
You survived another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, the podcast about bad things. Join us next time for another true and thrilling story.